you're listening to Current Issues, the radio show. Our website is www.republicbroadcasting.org. And our phone number is 1-877-488-5350. If you'd like to ask Robert a question about what is going on in the United States to a United States citizen. Robert, okay, the 1% rule actually that Layla spoke of is something that came up back in 2001 in November during a meeting with George Tenet and Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, and they were talking about that there was a low possibility that Al-Qaeda or Pakistan was helping Al-Qaeda acquire nuclear weapon. Mm-hmm. And the 1% rule came up that if we know 1% that they are doing it, then we have to think of that as a certainty, as it is certain that they are actually acquiring a nuclear weapon. And that's what Layla thinks that they based the charges and the conviction on the 1% doctrine, which is if we know or if we think that you are, I guess this is similar to the Bush doctrine of preemptive strike. If we think that somebody is thinking of hurting us, then we go and basically kill them. And she thinks that because, you know, they have this very low possibility that he was involved in anything, then they have convicted him on this 1% rule, Cheney rule, which is called out there on the street. But I just wanted to explain to you what the 1%
doctrine is. I know that you, now that you do that, I think I know what, yeah, what to what you're referring, yes.
Yeah. Now, so basically, did Boyd and his sons, did the government identify any group that they were working with or wanting to work with?
No.
No.
It was
so
all. It was all talk.
Okay. So this Rambo guy in North Carolina wanting to. Now, did he have this Boyd guy? Was he like in some kind of like? Was he in the army? Was he in the service? Was he part of a militia before?
No, he was, like I said, he had gone to Afghanistan,
yeah,
and
okay.
Had, I think he spent a total of 6 months there, and, you know, did go through some training there, and then ultimately came back to the United States, but he was, that was basically it. I don't believe he ever served prior to that, like in the U.S. military, for example.
Okay. So Bob, I mean, you know, this is mind-boggling, and you know, when Layla explained it, of course, Layla did not have the particulars that you had or that you pointed out. But I mean, does it right here in the United States, where we're supposed to have a constitution, and we're supposed to have a trial by our peers, and it's supposed to be no reasonable doubt left that a person is actually is proving guilty of a crime, but we see here that the Constitution was just walked all over it. What happened to the Constitution of the United States in this case?
Well, interestingly here, the defense lawyers at trial did ask the judge to instruct the jury with respect to the First Amendment that they could not convict any of the defendants, including Mr. Yagi, on the basis of their speech, even militant speech, because there's a case out of the Supreme Court that comes. There was a whole bunch of cases, you know, in the late 50s and early 60s, one being Brandenburg versus Ohio, in which the Supreme Court said that encouraging, you know, advocating violent action, unless that is protected by the First Amendment, except if you're advocating imminent violent action. So in other words, we can believe that, for example, in that violence is necessary to, engage change, somewhere. We're allowed to believe that. We're allowed to advocate that. That's what the First Amendment says. First Amendment doesn't protect saying, go over there and shoot that man. That would be a violation of the law. But and a lot of these, interestingly enough, cases protected the rights of the Ku Klux Klan. It went to the Supreme Court, Brandenburg, in particular, and there were some other cases where, Klansmen were prosecuted and they won in the Supreme Court.
So what you're saying, Bob, what you are saying is, if I say, look, guys, we need to close that abortion clinic, whatever it takes, we got to close it. And now I can say that, but if I actually start organizing actual material to close it, then that would be considered imminent. But me saying we need to close that abortion clinic no matter what, doesn't matter what it takes, that's not actually against
the law. Well, there's all fine lines here in terms of what your speech would say. But there is actually our cases around that very issue that you talk about, abortion clinics, because there are websites of people who want to close down abortion clinics, which basically publish the names and home addresses of doctors,
right,
who perform abortions, and many of them have, when brought up on criminal or civil charges, have prevailed on First Amendment grounds. There's some that haven't, who have, of course, gone that one step over the line. But yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, the First Amendment, protects that kind of speech if it's limited to speech.
Do you feel like the government really is trying its best to have some convictions on terrorism cases? Because, you said something that is very interesting, that the government thought that these two kids who ended up on the beach in Egypt, that these two kids went to Germany and Egypt looking for organizations to work with, and apparently they came back empty-handed, even if they did go to look for that. So apparently we don't even have organizations that are interested in hurting the United States, because these two kids, if the government theory was correct, they could not even find a taker over there.
Well, yeah, I mean, and not that they even did that, but, especially if you're traveling under your own name on your own passport with a round-trip ticket.
Right.
It is bizarre, and I know that, yourself and your listeners would say, well, how could they ever get convicted?
Right.
With this kind of evidence, where was the jury? Well, there was a lot of testimony about speech and about jihad and the Boyds themselves, what they admitted, which, your average American juror there in eastern North Carolina, I mean, just wasn't, they're not used to it, or, particularly in, obviously, even after all these years after 9/11, there are deep-seated prejudices and assumptions about Islam and Muslims. And so all of these trials take place in this kind of context. You don't have the opportunity during them to really, it's a lot of sound bites and not really a lot of opportunity to understand, thought,
Robert,
and things like
feel,
that.
Do you feel there was a conspiracy from our intelligence services to get a conviction, like a conspiracy to get a conviction? It doesn't matter how, where, and who, we need to convict some terrorists here, even if they're not terrorists?
Well, I mean, it's not so much a conspiracy, a la conspiracy theory, but this is going on all over the country. And a lot of, the Boyd situation and Yagi's case is just one example.
Do you know of similar
overreaching
cases?
Overreaching in terms of prosecutions of Muslims, and on alleged terrorism charges.
How many of those cases do you think are there are around the country?
Oh, you know, dozens. I mean, there.
How many people
more.
Been convicted?
I wouldn't want to hazard a guess, but probably a few hundred. I would think. I mean, there was a case here. You know, I'm from in the New York area of called the Newburgh Four, where. And this was, you know, involving an FBI agent who...
I was going to say, most of these cases involved, like, the FBI from the get-go. They're the one who concocted
the whole thing, and they
brought in some willing, I guess, participants.
Yeah, or people who weren't willing, and they made them willing by offering them money and other things, yes.
Leila, let me ask you, I'm sure you've been talking to a lot of people. Do you know how many... Muslims have been convicted? What about like in North Carolina? Do you know of any besides this group who have been convicted there, Leila?
No, we are the first case.
Do you know if there was any more cases after that?
Not on terrorism charges, no.
Okay. Do we have Mel with us? Mel, are you with us?
I am.
Yeah, Mel. Welcome to the program. Let me ask you something. Are you following just Ziad's case, or did you follow other cases? I think you were following Samuel Aryan's case too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's where I started following cases. Yes, he was a neighbor and a colleague of mine, and you know, I saw what happened there. That he was, you know, innocent, and in his case, the jury saw that also. But you know, he's.
So how many of those cases that you are aware of around the country or in your area, like in Florida, North Carolina, et cetera? Do you know of any other cases?
I'm the part of the National Coalition to Protect Civil Freedoms, and one of our member groups is called Project Salaam, and they have been following cases and trying to collect a list of people. I think they're following about 800 cases.
800 cases in courts against Muslims who are...
Mostly Muslims, not all. They're starting to... They have what is called a domestic terrorist.
Okay.
Which would be like your environmental people or we have,
Basically, I wanted to know how many, if you have the answer, how many cases similar to Ziad's where he's a Muslim and he was charged with whatever. Do you have any idea how many of those are around the country?
I can't give an exact number. I would say hundreds.
Mm-hmm. But you're saying it's in the hundreds?
I would say in the hundreds, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you know of anyone that was actually anyone that was convicted that actually belonged to a terrorist organization?
No. Bob,
what about you? Have you heard of anyone like actually being or getting convicted that actually belonged, he was in the United States and actually belonged to a terrorist organization out of all these hundreds of cases?
I mean, I would have to think about that really hard. And also, you know, just get into what the facts of the particular cases are. Obviously, every case is different. And and the evidence in every case is different. So I would, but most of the ones that I'm familiar with are the kind of FBI trumped up thing, these entrapment cases, or ones similar to Ziad's, where there's no evidence of any kind of actual international tie. The so-called lone wolf cases, when I was sitting here, I came to me out of Boston involving Tarek Mahana, who was just recently convicted. It was a very similar case. He did a lot of Facebook postings and speech, and he was convicted of, you know, material support on material support as well. And I think he either was just sentenced or is coming up for sentencing very soon.
No, they sentenced him.
Yeah.
What was he? What did he get, Layla?
17 years.
17 years. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what. If Facebook postings will send someone to jail, I guess they will hang me for what I put on my Facebook.
Well, the first thing prosecutors do when they have a defendant is go look up their Facebook page. So, you know, be warned, everyone.
Oh, well, they'll have plenty of things to hang me with on there. But I guess so. Where are you going with this, Bob? Are you going to go with the First Amendment and the Constitution? You're going to prove that this whole thing was unconstitutional, or you want to deal with the particulars of the case? And I understand that you probably will be going to a higher court with this.
Yeah, I'm actually representing Mr. Yagi on appeal.
To what court?
We will be arguing both the constitutional issues and the fact that we will argue that the evidence against him was what's called legally insufficient. In other words, that's saying that even if the government's case is true, which of course we dispute, it still didn't amount to what they're saying it did, a conspiracy to provide material support. So we'll be doing, a whole host of issues, and that'll be going up to the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, which covers North Carolina, and we hope we'll be there very soon, and, you know, within a year, I think we should have a decision.
Now, if that doesn't work, what is the next step?
Well, if that doesn't work, I mean, we would have to sit down and strategize. I mean, there are some legal options after that, but it would be really too early to, to speculate on that.
Do you think Ziad's case would be the classical case that might probably attract the attention of people nationwide, and that would actually like make it to the United States Supreme Court?
I'm his lawyer and I'm biased, but I think it should. I mean, I think that it is if young, 18-year-old young men can get 31 years in prison for engaging in speech, even if that speech is offensive and we disagree with it, but just because it comes from, a young, Muslim,